You are listening to the IoT for All Media Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the IoT for All podcast on the IoT for All Media Network. I'm your host, Ryan Chacon, one of the co-creators of IoT for All. Now, before we jump into this episode, please don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or join our newsletter at iotforall.com/newsletter to catch all the newest episodes as soon as they come out. Before we get started, if any of you out there are looking to enter the fast-growing and profitable IoT market but don't know where to start, check out our sponsor, Leverage's IoT Solutions Development Platform, which provides everything you need to create turnkey IoT products that you can white label and resell under your own brand. To learn more, go to iotchangeseverything.com. That's iotchangeseverything.com. So, without further ado, please enjoy this episode of the IoT for All podcast. Welcome, Pablo, to the IoT for All show. How's your week going so far?
Hi, Ryan. Nice to meet you. And yeah, it's pretty busy for us. I'll explain later why, but
Well, fantastic. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit more about your, who you are, background experience, those kinds of things. Introduce yourself to our audience a little bit, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So my background is in the user experience and product experience design. Before starting Blink, I've been working in an automotive industry, working with giants like Ford, Chrysler, and other players in this space. So we've been building machine learning for these companies. And my role was to run a team of user experience designers who would define how drivers would interact with all these new capabilities of machine learning inside of the connected cars. So that's my background.
Fantastic. And now, going to Blink, the company that you founded and we're kind of focusing on today. Tell us about Blink, what you all do, the focus you have in IoT. And then also, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the story behind kind of the founding of the company. You know, why was it started? What was the opportunity you saw in the market? All that kind of good stuff.
Sure. So Blink today is an Internet of Things platform. And while there are many, many other IoT platforms out there, our primary focus is on enabling people, and by that I mean individuals and businesses, to actually focus on the practical applications of the Internet of Things. So we offer different products that allow them not only to connect the device and start harvesting the data from it, but we focus a lot on building applications for that. So basically we offer drag and drop UI builders for the mobile application for iOS and Android. Mm-hmm. And we of course offer all the fundamentals like cloud infrastructure, agent for the hardware, all of that. But yeah, our focus is on bringing great user experience for those who will be interacting with these connected devices.
Fantastic. And when the company was founded, what was the opportunity that you kind of saw in the market, and why was, you know, Blink kind of the answer to all that?
That's a funny story, actually. So as I said, my background is in automotive. And when I was working there, at some point, I realized that we have to build prototypes with electronics. So we had to set up our smartphones and tablets so that they work with different electronics in the car, so that we can kind of test our assumptions and for the driver's experience, for the user experience. And this is what kind of brought me into electronics world. There I discovered that there is no way to prototype, basically, prototype any software that would interact with electronics. There were some solutions, but they were too clunky, absolutely non-user friendly. And at that stage, there was like the internet was already pretty developed. You could build a website very easily. And I thought, okay, maybe there's an opportunity that we can build an easy way for people like me who are not really great at coding and writing their own kind of applications. And also not very good, really good at electronics as well, so that they kind of can try very easily to build something tangible, something practical that they can use. This is where I discovered Arduino and all these like electronics kits. And this is where basically the idea of Blink started. And then I partnered with my co-founders, Dmitry and Volodymyr, and we started a company on the Kickstarter. We had a really amazing feedback from the community of engineers who work with electronics every day. And we realized, oh, okay, we are onto something. So basically, our first product was a drag and drop UI builder that works with any electronics. And we supported like 400 different microcontrollers and like Arduino, Texas Instruments, Raspberry Pis, all of that. And then it kind of slowly developed into being a commercial solution when other companies are using the same instruments and the same kind of flexibility and simplicity to build commercial grade products with Blink.
Gotcha. And from a focus standpoint, where are you guys kind of focused on from like on the industry side of things? And there are any potential use cases, deployments, you know, in the real world that we could talk a little bit about more here would be fantastic.
Absolutely. So because we offer kind of a constructor, there are multiple applications of Blink in different verticals. However, we definitely see a lot of applications in smart home. This is like 50 to 60% of all the products that are built with Blink, mostly Wi-Fi connected. The next big niche for us would be HVAC, so heating, ventilation, air conditioning. For example, we work with a company called Raypak. Raypak is a part of Rheem, which is the third biggest manufacturer of HVAC equipment in the world. So we worked with them by deploying a new generation of connected boilers, for example, and which basically dramatically changed how this company operates today.
Fantastic. So well, I want to take a step back from kind of talking about the company and you know the history of the company, which is always great, and talk a little bit more about your experiences with working with customers and the kind of that journey from prototype to product launch, getting you know, to that kind of the commercial scale side of things. Just take me through what a typical journey looks like from prototype to product launch from your perspective. Mm-hmm. And then I have some follow-up questions from there.
Sure. So we see a typical journey like a very pretty straightforward. So basically this all starts with an idea or a business opportunity. And then usually most of the clients we work with, they have some sort of an engineering background, right? So they manufacture something that is controlled by electronics. And they have certain department in their company who kind of knows how it works. But beyond that, they don't usually have a lot of expertise. But the next steps for them would be to define the hardware and the connectivity method. And it really depends on the application that they're working on and on the where these devices will be deployed, obviously. From there, they would need to build some sort of a very simple prototype, which would first of all connect to some sort of a server, whether it's local one or cloud hosted. And then they would need to start kind of initiating the communication between the server and the device so that we can receive the data, store it, and then we can also send the data back to the device, including over-the-air updates and all of that. So that would be like the first step. After that, we need to make something kind of practical out of it because it's like, of course, it depends on the use case. But most likely there will be a certain user interface, whether it's something that's used internally in the company or something that's used by end customers. So there will be like a next step of prototyping some sort of an interface that would work with this device. After that, we typically see kind of the next stage of this prototype where it's scaled up a bit to a larger fleet of devices. And it really depends on devices. Sometimes maybe it's 40 devices, sometimes it's 200. Typically, we see like something around 200 at max for this stage. And after that, usually some feedback collected from the potential customers, from the focus group, if company can allow them to do so. And after that, they're trying to roll it out like full scale with the final deployment. And of course, after that, the journey just begins because they can develop the product, they can make it better, they can improve it over time, change it because IoT allows all of that just with the software.
So if somebody was you were kind of just first meeting and talking about their journey that they wanted to go on to bring an IoT kind of product solution to market, and they asked you, what are the most common hurdles or challenges that they're probably going to have to think about and overcome and how they can prepare for them? What would you say to that?
I think that currently, from what we see, I mean, I'm of course kind of leaning towards our solution as a software, obviously. So we try to make it very, very simple to use the software. But even with that, we see that the majority of the complexity goes into the actual product design and then hardware design. Because the rest is more or less solvable, whether by using certain platform or by maybe bringing people in-house with certain expertise. Right. It depends on the budget that you can allow. But this first stage, even for the companies who are focused on manufacturing, it's still like a long way. Just to give you an example, we have clients that who developed their product for 2 years. And then they called us, and we deployed them in 2 weeks, commercially, right? On for the client already. So I think that this is the biggest challenge: the hardware connectivity part, defining how it should work so that it's kind of long term solution, that it's reliable, then that it solves all the kind of requirements of the product as it was designed.
Right. So that makes a ton of sense. And one other thing I wanted to ask is, when you are working with these organizations, what are your thoughts? And this might not even be directly with the companies you work with, but just perception from the market. There's always the conversation that kind of comes up around integrating IoT into existing business processes and the systems kind of that are already in place. How do you kind of handle that on your end? And what general advice do you have for companies who are kind of concerned about that piece?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. So we see that this item is very often overlooked by companies who integrate the IoT solution. And it just happens because usually the decision comes somewhere from the product department or from engineering department, because kind of they follow their technology trends and everything, and they think on how it can be used for their products, or some R&D departments, right? But then let's say the product is ready and it's deployed. And after that, this innovation, first of all, it can change how companies operate dramatically. Like for the technical support, it's just a game changer. For marketing, they have a new, maybe direct channel of communicating with the customers. So we need to onboard the whole organization, all the departments.
Right.
They can benefit from this solution. And this is something that is rarely on the plan for the IoT integration. Usually it's all about technology, hardware, connectivity, cloud scaling, and all of that. But yeah, this is a very important thing. You need to have trainings. You need to have brainstorms with different teams, because they can, once they understand the kind of what they're getting out of it, they generate amazing ideas for themselves, how this technology can be used internally in the organization. And this is a really kind of long and complex process that should be somehow planned and budgeted. And basically you just can't ignore it.
Absolutely. No, I think it's something that companies might sometimes be a little naive to when they're coming into it, but it's important to know that there's experts out there that they can work with who really understand how to integrate IoT technologies and systems into existing business processes and systems to provide the value that, you know, they're seeking. And I think it's something that's oftentimes overlooked.
That's so true. Yeah.
What I wanted to ask following a kind of this conversation is around the monetization side of things. When you're talking with customers, what are the common questions that people have around monetization strategies when it comes to IoT? And how do you and your clients kind of approach this?
Yeah, that's I think it's one of the biggest questions usually during the calls, initial calls. And we see that the whole monetization thing is also very often overlooked as well. So people or companies don't plan a lot about that. So they just try to kind of follow the trends and get on the IoT train and like be competitive and this and that. But yeah, they definitely should start thinking about monetization, because first of all, Internet of Things products, they require recurring kind of expenses. And this is something that is also part of a decision that companies should make, how they will kind of make returns on investment, on their investments.
Right.
And as always, there are different strategies. I would separate them into two major buckets as I can see them. The first one is something I call indirect monetization. For example, if you are just collecting the data from, let's say, boilers that are out there in the wild, And this is something that you haven't done before. And now you have a full visibility on the fleet of devices. You can see how they perform, how they fail, right, what leads to failure. And this gives you a way to improve your products over time. And even if you don't monetize your customers, this is already like an investment that brings you certain returns indirectly this way or another. And this is just one of the examples of the indirect monetization. And of course, there are direct monetizations where, first of all, you can include the costs, the projected costs of the software and other services into the price of the product. It's a bit difficult, but it's doable as well. Of course, it can increase the price significantly, but you still have to plan for it. Otherwise, there will be no returns. The other way would be to charge customers for premium services, which is a very common thing in the software as a service world. Yeah, just offer premium features for a monthly fee, for an annual fee. A very interesting direction in monetization is replenishment. And we see this trend is picking up very, very much. Basically, if there is a product that requires certain refills, for example, like it's a printer with an ink cartridge that needs to be replaced, or if it's a water filter where you need to replace filters certain times. So this is a great opportunity for companies to reduce the churn, definitely, because if it's working kind of automatically in the background and if device reordering this kind of supplies, then people just don't think about it. It's a very kind of convenient. It's great, and it helps companies to continue upselling upselling customers. So it's a very nice way of monetizing. I'm definitely sure that there are like more creative ways for doing that, but I would say that these are the major ones that we see today.
Yeah, I think we're going to see monetization strategies kind of evolve over the course of the next number of years with IoT. And it really depends on kind of the angle you take it, you approach it from as well. So, you know, you have obviously a monetization strategy. The customers you work with may or may not have a monetization strategy, whether they're building something for themselves or for a customer to resell. But it kind of definitely varies by industry, varies, you know, by the business model that it's kind of being associated with. I mean, it really does depend on the business that they're in, because you can't just force a monetization model on a particular business or industry. It has to make sense for kind of everyone involved in order for to succeed. So I think we're going to see kind of it grow as IoT grows on the different kinds of monetization models that come out and the ones that kind of work the best.
Can't agree more. And for example, a good example would be a smart home world. People who buy smart home products, they're just not ready to pay for any additional services. I mean, they pay for like camera recordings, storage and all of that. But at the core, you won't be paying for like a Philips Hue bulb, right? So additional, I mean, apart from the product. And this is why it kind of brings many questions to the company who is manufacturing and how they are going to keep the servers running and keep the people updating their products and all of that. So that's a big challenge for this industry. Absolutely.
So let me ask you kind of a broader question about kind of the focus that we either should be seeing or need to see as it relates to the growth of IoT and those needs associated with enterprises versus small businesses. So as enterprises and small businesses adopt IoT, where do you see the most need kind of coming from in those two areas? So larger enterprise companies and smaller businesses, where do you kind of see those needs and the focus as we kind of grow going forward?
Sure. That's a pretty good question. I think that in general, they're facing the same challenges, but the magnitude of these challenges is just different. And I think that the major challenge any company would face is usually a lack of expertise. So Internet of Things is a multi-expert kind of multicultural, multi-expertise domain. on one side, you have this all these electrical things and electronics and connectivity. Right. Connectivity, by the way, is the next domain. Then we have the scaling of the backend infrastructure, which is a completely different thing and requires different specialists in this area, then who also would need to provide the support, which would bring us to the developer operations. Then we need, we have a completely different area of expertise, which is product experience and product experience and product design, how people will be interacting with this product. And it would be like designers who are working on that. It will be front-end engineers or application engineers who are working on that. Yeah, so there's just so many moving parts. And if like connectivity doesn't work, then everything else doesn't matter. So they're so interconnected. And this is the biggest challenge, because a small company, for example, they just can't they don't have resources for hiring that many experts in these many areas. So they have to, I would recommend just sticking to a certain solution that would solve their needs, like certain platform. But even for the big companies, we see that they're struggling with the same things, because this is new, this is complex. And while they can definitely hire engineers in-house, still it's a kind of, it increases the time to market and increases the investments that they do. So I think that these are the biggest challenges in the beginning. And then definitely finding the best business model, finding the best monetization strategy would be the next one I would mention and stress on.
Absolutely. That's great. And one of the last questions I had kind of as we're wrapping up here is, when it comes to IoT development, where are kind of the major cost drivers in that, or maybe some of the unforeseen cost drivers that are worth mentioning?
Sure. So I think that we kind of briefly touched already a few of them, and there are certain kind of visible things that are more or less clear and straightforward. And there are just many hidden things, like the we discussed with integrating within the big organization. This is usually not planned at all. Of course, the majority of in terms of the product development, I would say that the software versus hardware should cost somewhere the same. So from our perspective, so if you kind of manufacture product, it costs, let's say, $100, then you should plan at least $100 for the software, because software is just, you can't eliminate this factor from the Internet of Things. It's just a very important thing. That just won't work. And then, of course, it brings to the major cost of the development of that. So we need the engineers who will be building that. And whether you choose the platform, it might cost much less. If you want to build in-house, it would cost much, much more. And of course, something that we already touched as well, you need to plan for ongoing and recurring costs. And this is, I can't stress more about that, because not everyone thinks about that when they start their new IoT startup or new company, right, or building a new product line. You just need to understand how you are going to support that. And it basically requires the same team of people to support it, and the same amount of people who would need to build that. And it's all ongoing costs as well, not to mention servers. Everything else.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about. The last question I had is kind of unrelated to anything we talked about. It's very general of a question, because it's something that is brought up a lot, and it's the democratization of IoT. When somebody says that to you, what does that mean to you, and kind of how do you or what does it make you think about when people bring that up?
I think that first of all, it makes me think about Blink, because this is our mission. So we are really trying to, I mean, this is actually our mission in the company. We try to make it, first of all, affordable for business of any scale to build a connected product. But this is just the one thing, because second one, we're trying to make it very, very simple. And I think that this is the actual the democratization, where democratization is kind of happening. So we need to make it affordable and available for everyone who is trying to make a business in this industry. So I think that's basically the two kind of pillars of democratization in the Internet of Things.
Fantastic. Last thing I want to ask you before we finish up is regarding Blink, any news or anything kind of coming out on the horizon that we should be on the lookout for? And if our audience has more questions, wants to follow up, kind of get a better sense of what you're all doing. What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so it's a pretty good timing because we just launched the new generation of Blink platform, brings another level of democratization, I think, to the Internet of Things.
Fantastic.
So basically any business can build a connected product and have a mobile applications to present it to the end customers. And then whether it's a Blink application as a kind of a global portal which works with multiple devices, or it's a standalone application with your brand, with your application icon, name, and so all published to the Google Store, Google Play and App Store. So we offer all these options. And we offer all the backend and the cloud infrastructure. And we offer the console, which is the management dashboard where you can oversee your devices, clients, all the other departments of the organization, do over-the-air updates and all of that. So basically, it's a complete set of software that you would need to build a connected product. And we see working with different clients that currently at this stage, we cover about 90 to 100% of all the IoT use cases a company would face in the next, 5 years of their IoT journey right now.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate the time. Truly, this has been a fantastic conversation. And it sounds like you guys have a lot of exciting things going on over at Blink. So I'm excited to kind of stay up to date and see what comes out next. We'll make sure we link up all the necessary information for our audience. If they have questions, want to follow up, can reach out. So thanks again for your time, and would love to have you back sometime in the future.
Absolutely. I also write articles to IoT for All sometimes, people can check this as well. Thanks a lot for the interview. It was a pleasure speaking, and thanks for a great job you're doing with this portal, bringing the news of the industry to everyone who's interested.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Okay.
All right, everyone, thanks again for joining us this week on the IoT for All podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave us a rating or review and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on whichever platform you're listening to us on. Also, if you have a guest you'd like to see on the show, please drop us a note at ryan@iotforall.com and we'll do everything we can to get them as a featured guest. Other than that, thanks again for listening and we'll see you next time.